Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
We have been monitoring and engaging with the authorities, essentially from a starting point that the right to protest, the freedom of assembly, is enshrined in Article 37 of our Constitution.
Amnesty International expresses concern about the use of force against protesters in Kenya.
The latest fight in our party is over money that Mr. Museveni advanced to the party president and the secretary general in the middle of 2021 general election.
Supporters of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, or FDC, demand the resignation of the leader and general secretary of the party.
We believe that the procurement of these vehicles are not necessary now, given the fact that virtually we have to borrow money to do everything. So why must we borrow money to buy this safety and expensive, cars?
And groups call on Nigerian lawmakers to drop plans to use more than $56 million to purchase exotic bulletproof vehicles for lawmakers and officials. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Kenya, Amnesty International has expressed concern about the use of force against protesters. This after demonstrators complained that the police use excessive force against them. Local media reports say at least 30 people have died, with many more injured since March due to the alleged use of excessive force by the police. President William Ruto, however, says he supports efforts by the police to prevent chaos and the destruction of public property and infrastructure. The demonstrators are protesting against the high cost of living, inflation and increased taxes. Irungu Houghton is Amnesty International's executive director in Kenya. He tells me that the organization is calling on the police to immediately stop the use of excessive force.
Amnesty International Kenya has been extremely concerned by the increasing number of violent responses to protests since March. We have been monitoring and engaging with the authorities, essentially from a starting point that the right to protest, the freedom of assembly, is enshrined in Article 37 of our Constitution. The responsibility of the police is essentially to facilitate citizens to be able to non-violently protest, and the responsibility of citizens is to make sure that those protests are not violent, and secondly, that they are the police are notified at least 3 days before the events. In many cases, we've seen Article 37 violated a number of times. And what's worrying most is that the policing strategy seems to get even more hardline and far from this constitutional standard as the days go by.
But Irungu, President Ruto says he is pleased with how the police are cracking down on these protests that some described as violent, protesters, destroying property and damaging public infrastructure.
I think as Amnesty International Kenya, we would have a different perspective. I think what we have seen from a number of the attempts to protest peacefully is that the strategy has been to deny protesters the opportunity to be able to picket and to demonstrate their concerns with legitimate public policy issues, like, for example, the introduction of a taxation act or the cost of living. We've seen preemptive arrests of protest organizers. We've seen police stations refuse to accept letters of notification to the police that were made lawfully and in good faith, essentially to provide assistance from the police in terms of making sure that the protests are non-violent. We've seen also indiscriminate use of tear gas, not just in the streets of at least seven counties, but in homes that could go in any direction. So I think there is a return to reason that's required on the part of the executive. And secondly, also...
P.S. Mokemenen says roads in Kisumu damaged during protests will cause Kenyans
200 million shillings to repair. This is what critics are saying, that if these protesters and their leaders truly want their issues to be addressed, then there should be a dialogue to find a solution to it, rather than going on demonstrations, which is legitimate, as you said, but then the destruction of property of Kenyans is also worrying, they argue. Your take?
The cost of the of violent policing really has been felt in different ways. Yes, Kenya cannot afford to see public infrastructure destroyed. Businesses cannot afford to see their businesses damaged or looted. There's no family that can accept the loss of a loved one as a result of either being shot or being attacked by other citizens, for that matter. And I think what we have to do is we have to see immediately a outreach in terms of dialogue opportunity. The state has the moral authority, it has the monopoly of violence, and therefore it is really for the state to reach out, first of all, to bring the political opposition back to the table to discuss the issues that are raised.
Journalists are expressing concern that plainclothes police officers are pretending to be journalists covering the protest and then arrest some of the protesters. They said this will be putting journalists' lives at risk in covering this protest. Is this a major concern to Amnesty International?
As Amnesty International Kenya, we are deeply concerned by the increasing use of non-uniformed officers. This is against the police standing orders. Officers do need to be identifiable and held accountable for really their actions. But I think it's also a point of safety for police officers that they are not confused potentially with looters and criminals. And I think it the continued use of non-uniformed officers not only puts them individually at risk, but it also confuses the situation. I think as journalists, they have been real concerns that they will be targeted but through some confusion that they are potentially plainclothes police officers. So I think this needs to stop immediately.
Irungu Houghton is Amnesty International's executive director in Kenya. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Uganda, some supporters of the main opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, are demanding the resignation of the leader and general secretary of the party. They accuse Patrick Oboi Amuriat and Nandala Mafabi of failing to properly account for funds since the last elections in 2021. Local media say some supporters of the FDC are concerned that their infighting could weaken the party. For this, they blame the governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM. Supporters of the NRM reject the accusation. They are calling on the FDC to resolve its internal problems since, they argue, the country needs a strong, viable opposition to deepen democracy in the East African country. For the latest development in the opposition party, I reach Ibrahim Semuju. He is a parliamentarian and a leading member of the opposition FDC.
The latest fight in our party is over money that Mr. Museveni advanced to the party president and the secretary general in the middle of 2021 general election. Unfortunately, instead of accounting for that money that came in from Mr. Museveni, the money that came is believed to be even more than $5 million. But the leaders have kept dragging their feet. And one of them, the Secretary General, in one of the meetings, even attempting to fight with Dr. Kizza Besigye, the founding president of the FDC. Because of the fear that the two might sell the FDC to Museveni, like our colleagues in Uganda People's Congress, founded by Dr. Milton Obote, did, and Democratic Party. That's why today we are saying, no, you guys, I think enough is enough. We can no longer handle this matter internally. Let us go and explain ourselves to the public.
Are top leaders of the party calling on these two gentlemen to resign, apart from calling for them to properly account for the funds?
There are even petitions for them to resign. Unfortunately, they are working with the state, like BP and UPC used to do. Yesterday, July 20th, when the party chairman went to our headquarters on Entebbe Road to address the media, they hired unknown people, and that's how they ended up beating journalists. There are journalists who left our headquarters bleeding.
Semuju, some people are saying opposition groups always blame the government or the authorities for your own internal problems. Why wouldn't you be able to handle your own internal problems but blame somebody else for your own problems?
Part of the problem is that Mr. Museveni uses money and uses security apparatus. When you are fighting or attempting to resolve matters internally, those that he has compromised are going to make it extremely, very difficult. I have told you, you can say members blaming each other, but when you are at a point of beating journalists for covering an activity at your headquarters, there is no room to have these matters resolved internally because of the hand of Mr. Museveni.
If members of your party will sell themselves to so-called the highest bidder and do not hold the party's values and will sell your party out, then it is your party that has the problem by not selecting people who uphold true values of the party, correct?
You see, you can select a person who is good at the time that you are selecting him. Human beings, by their nature, are very difficult. Someone has been clean today, tomorrow may not be. If there are processes to deal with these matters and those processes are not interfered with, this would have been a very simple matter. But I'm telling you, in Uganda, I mean, I am a member of parliament. Museveni has invaded parliament and beaten us. I was in prison when he was changing the constitution to stay in power. He used the money and used security. So we are talking about someone who is all out to kill political institutions in Uganda, and he has said it himself. You have the president of the Democratic Party, who is a minister in Museveni's government. His members sit with us in the opposition. You have part of Uganda People's Congress MPs sitting with Museveni's party, and then their leader sitting opposite. So I'm talking about a very unique situation that you may not find in Kenya and Tanzania.
Now, there are reports, Semuju, that what is going on in the party right now, the FDC, could lead to disintegration. Is this a reality on the ground?
I cannot rule it out. What gives me comfort is that the population that is opposed to Museveni in Uganda keeps drifting between political parties. 1996, when we had the election, the main presidential candidate was Dr. Paul Ssemwogerere of the Democratic Party. The subsequent elections until 2021, the main opposition leader was Dr. Kizza Besigye. In the last election, it was the musician Bobi Wine. So the population will remain united. They can be let down by one or two leaders, but they will always find a solution.
Ibrahim Semuju is a Ugandan parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala.
Although research shows that Africa has the highest number of women entrepreneurs globally, women remain massively underrepresented in venture capital investments compared to their male counterparts. On this episode of Our Voices, we'll examine why African women on the continent and in the diaspora continue to face challenges in securing funds to start their businesses. Join the conversations Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
In Nigeria, two prominent groups are calling on the House of Representatives and the Senate to drop plans to use more than $56 million to purchase 465 exotic bulletproof vehicles for lawmakers and officials. Local media reports say the plans involve about $88 million as palliatives for new members. Leaders of the Civil Society Legislative Advocacy Center, or CESLA, and the Socio-Economic Rights and Accountability Project, or SERAP, say the idea is deaf and insensitive to the plight of ordinary Nigerian. Serap went further to issue a one-week ultimatum for the lawmaking bodies to drop the plans. The two groups call them unpatriotic, especially due to the recent fuel price hike, inflation, and rising food and commodity prices. Awal Musa is the executive director of the Civil Society Legislative Advisory Center, or CISLAC. He tells me that President Bola Tinubu should ensure that there are no new purchases of exotic luxury cars for his ministers and other public offices.
Our reaction is that our financial situation in the country, with the suffering that Nigerians are being made to suffer, and with the fact that some of these vehicles, were unnecessary because we already have some, of these vehicles available, we believe that the procurement of these vehicles are not necessary now. given the fact that virtually we have to borrow money to do everything. So why must we borrow money to buy this executive and expensive cars for the lawmakers? So we believe that the amount that is, you know, going to cost us can be used to cushion the suffering of the Nigerian people who have been made to make sacrifices, but the lawmakers and the public official, both from the executive and the legislature, are not ready to make any sacrifice. As a matter of fact, what we are seeing is more extravagant spending that is not in tandem with our economy, and that is not in tandem with, you know, the feelings and the suffering that Nigerians are going through.
A lot of supporters of these lawmakers across the political divide are of the view that democracy is expensive, and you have to take care of those who make the laws in the country. So this is just a microcosm, just a small amount of money that is going to be used to take care of people who are representing the people. So the call is misplaced, they said. Your response to that?
No, I don't think they understand what is going on. I think most people who have spoken in favor of this, you know, extravagancy spending, they don't seem to understand and appreciate the fact that already our lawmakers are earning, when you look at globally, one of the first category of lawmakers who are earning much. Public official, Nigeria appointed and elected official, are earning so much in this country, leaving the poor Nigerians continuing to suffer in poverty and swallow. So I think it is absolutely necessary that we also put the nation first, put the people we represent first. They are already taking enough, and they have not even started work for any productivity from their work. I think, you know, they should have made this, you know, demand maybe after they have demonstrated their, you know, patriotic, you know, intervention and legislative work that will see the effective and responsible oversight that will block leakages in terms of spending and stealing and diversion of public taxpayers' money.
Some Nigerians are saying that these lawmakers must be protected. So they need these vehicles as part of their daily work.
No, this is not the kind of vehicles that they are requiring. These are special vehicles for principal officers and also for them. I think, you know, each one of them, you know, had already, you know, car, you know, official car by the National Assembly. And if they don't go around, see what is happening, if they don't go around to see what is happening in the various communities and the various constituency, how will they ensure that the contractors that are awarded contract to fix the road have done their work diligently and responsibly? So I think it is important that we differentiate that the lawmakers are being properly taken care of. You know, the monthly salaries and allowance and other privileges of government that they have is overwhelming. And therefore, I did not think that, you know, they should be overspoiled. Already they are spoiled with so many, you know, leverages and so many access that they have in government. Everything, you know, they can access it and they have those privileges. And I think it is important that it is time for them to start work rather than just continue to collect. If you know that you are, you know, not coming to make the sacrifice that you are supposed to do, you shouldn't in the first place, you know, when to say you want to contest election, preventing those who are ready to make sacrifice for the nation building. I think National Assembly should be seen as a place for helping for nation building, not for profit making. Yes.
Awal Musa is the executive director of the Civil Society Legislative Advisory Center, CISLAC. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Liberia, the Student Unification Party, or SUP, from the University of Liberia, plans to launch a nationwide protest to boycott the July 26th Independence Anniversary celebrations. Leaders of the students say the government has yet to investigate and prosecute financial improprieties committed by administration officials who are alleged to have been involved in corruption. The group is also demanding an investigation and prosecution of those responsible for the attack on student protesters in 2022. It contends that the perpetrators are well known to the authorities but are yet to be investigated and punished for the alleged crimes. But supporters of the government say the demands of the group are unreasonable, adding that investigations are ongoing. For more on their demands and plans for the protest, I reach Mohammed Jalo. He is the Secretary General of the Student Unification Party, or SUP.
Well, the Student Unification Party, as an institution with a very remarkable history against bad governance, against misgovernance, misrule, corruption, and administrative decadence, has considered to protest on July 26 against bad governance because the CDC government over the period in administrative leadership has reduced the condition of the Liberian people in their bars of poverty, destitution, and corruption. As I'm speaking to you now, across the landscape, the issues of corruption remain pervasive, bad governance remain pervasive. But given the period, 6 years down the line, as the leadership and the government, the CDC-led government has demonstrated no good governance. But instead, they have reduced the Liberian people into the abyss of administrative incompetence.
So what are the key demands that you are making?
Our key demand is the government to ensure that she musters the courage to decisively battle corruption. There is corruption at the Ministry of Agriculture. There is corruption at the Finance Ministry. There is corruption at all of the sectors of government within the Republic of Liberia.
But do you have proof? Do you have evidence to back these allegations you are making? Do you have evidence of that?
The Anti-Corruption Commission of the Republic of Liberia, an anti-graft institution of the Republic of Liberia, has clearly explained the extent to which this government of George Mani Wia has involved into corruption. There were cases at the latest involving and implicating officials of government up to present. This leadership is yet to take a decisive decision in prosecuting those who are involved into the corruption saga at latest. Anti-graft institution implicated numerous government officials.
One of the demands I hear that SCP is making is for the demand for a former student leader, justice for him. But the government, I understand, has been investigating some of these allegations of brutality to find the perpetrators and punish them. Why are you not satisfied with it?
The government has not prosecuted any of those involved into the July 26, 2022 terroristic attack against the students and against the militants and stalwarts of the Student Unification Party. All of those involved into that terroristic attack, they are happily masquerading the corridors within the Republic of Liberia, and justice is not being served. This is why on July 26th of this year, the Student Unification Party is going to mobilize the student masses and going to mobilize the Liberian people and to protest and demand justice for Commonwealth Sisulu Sivi. As I'm speaking to you now, we have engaged in a massive mobilization. As I'm speaking to you now, the comrades and ideologues of the Student Unification Party are engaged in intensive awareness and intensive political awareness in the rural trenches, in the slums, in the suburbs, and in the slums of the Republic of Liberia to ensure that on July 26, that the masses of the Liberian people will be out to inform the President of the Republic of Liberia, to inform the people of the Republic of Liberia, and to inform the citizens of the universe that the government of the Republic of Liberia has shown lack of political will to prosecute those who abused the Constitution on July 26 of 2022 by infringing on the fundamental rights of conscious students and conscious citizens.
Why are you saying the government lacks the political will to prosecute these people when investigations are yet to complete in order for them to prosecute with evidence those who are the alleged perpetrators of these alleged crimes?
The government has refused to prosecute them because these are elements who are reflected within the ranks of the CDC. These are elements who hold position within the Congress for Democratic Change. These are elements who hold strategic position within the political party that rules the country. And they have refused for the record to prosecute them because these are members of the CDC and the whole high rank officials within the CDC. And these are elements they use continuously to infringe on freedom of speech. These are elements they use continuously to resist and to harm critical voices who continue to stand up against misrule and bad governance.
Mohamed Jallo is the Secretary General of the Students Unification Party, or SUP. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Zambia, an independent parliamentarian says her one-week suspension from the lawmaking body for doing her job is not fair. Given Katuta was suspended for a week for leading a protest by walking out of parliament over remarks by a colleague, which she says were divisive and tribalistic. Katuta says she will continue her fight to bring development to her people, despite what she says appears to be a targeted plan by unknown forces to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration in parliament. She tells me that the speaker must be fair in carrying out her duties to prevent accusations of bias in favor of the government.
Actually, it's really shocking for me. What happened was that on the 14th of June, 2023, the Minister of Infrastructure was giving a ministerial statement regarding the deplorable state of the road of Mwinilunga. So when he was giving that statement, he gave a statement which was quite regional, and I'll take it as to be tribal. He said only northwestern and western provinces will be, you know, given development by the current government. And a few of my colleagues on the left-hand side of the speaker, we tried to, you know, to murmur, you know, seeing that what you said was just wrong, and seeing that we've been discouraging tribal remarks or regionalism. And I said, you know what, this man who dragged us into something that we don't know what his intentions are.
Are you saying because of what many are describing as tribalistic statement by the minister, the reason why you decided to lead the protest?
Yes, that's why I walked out. And I walked out when I walked out because of the speaker and the minister come from the same province. And the speaker will never rebuke anyone from UPND or anyone from a tribe. Whenever they would be insulting us, they'll call us names. Like they call me Lenshina, they call me a mad woman. She'll just ignore.
Weren't your insults tribalistic by nature? Per what you have said, Bembe's being the majority speaking language in Zambia?
I wasn't, because I realized that this, we've been experiencing this on the floor of the house. We've tried to stomach these regional and tribal remarks from the right-hand side towards us. And the speaker, not even a single day, she has rebuked anyone. I've got videos to that effect, which I can share with you. So when I stood up, I was blaming now my colleagues from our regions. My radio station got gutted because I was supporting UPND if I stood as an independent. But the way we've been treated like we're aliens from another, you know, another planet, all because UPND has issues with here. As long as you're a Bemba, and you know PF is associated with Bembas, you are all evil. And this is how we're being treated.
With your statement, are you therefore saying that the speaker has been biased, ruling in favor of the governing party?
I'm not even accusing her. And she has always been in support of the ruling party. And she has never rebuked anyone. The only thing that she did, she knew she was going to give me this. She's only did like a baby gloves treating, you know, massaging the Minister of Information. What the Minister of Information did was even worse, because you're not allowed to stand in front of the speaker, and she did that.
So what's your next line of action to get back to parliament or the National Assembly?
No, I'm going back to parliament. I'm still a member of parliament. I'm going back to serve the people of Chiengi, and I'm going to insist, and I'll continue speaking on the issue of the road, which has never been given to us. I want just to tell you something. Go on YouTube and check for the most dangerous road in Zambia. You find that it's Kashikeshi Chiengi Road. It's a death trap.
Given Katuta is an independent parliamentarian in Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Still in Zambia, The leader of the Association of Vendors is hailing the government's decision to remove all street vendors from the central business district of the capital, Lusaka. Frederick Tembo has also called on the government to further remove all street vendors across the country. The government's decision follows complaints that the vendors have filled up streets and are putting lives in danger. Some residents express concern that there are no sanitary facilities on the street and urge authorities to force the vendors into markets, which they argue have been empty. But the vendors and opposition groups say the authorities fail to give the vendors time to move elsewhere. Harry Calabar is the leader of the opposition group called Citizens First. He tells me that the actions of the authorities will impoverish the vendors.
The removal of vendors from the streets should have been guided by giving them notice. There could have been nothing wrong with government giving notice of even at least a month before carrying out the exercise, as opposed to ambushing the citizens. I think the action is in bad taste. It's uncalled for, especially in a democratic dispensation such as ours. We need to be ordered, and these guys need to be ordered.
But there is the issue of sanity on the streets, because the vendors had filled up most streets, endangering the lives of people. Isn't the government right by taking this bold step?
Look, I think nobody is arguing with them, asking the vendors to go in markets, especially if they have given them market space. There's nothing wrong with that, because we need sanity indeed. But it is the modus operandi in which this action has been taken. These are human beings. Despite them being poor, they needed to be given time. They needed to be given notice that this action was going to be taken and that they had a deadline in which they should have taken that action. But for them to just wake up in the night, in the early hours of that day, to go and ambush their own citizens, that is bad governance. And it is akin. It belongs to the Stone Age and not in our times.
But Harry, these vendors knew that what they have been doing is illegal. The ruling party has talked about it. And we all know that there are no sanitary facilities on the streets and the markets are empty. So why wouldn't they just go to the market and do their business there rather than in the streets?
Look, it doesn't matter the color of the cat. For as long as the cat can catch the mice, that is okay. The point we are making as a political party is that government should have informed the citizens. They should have informed the vendors that on such and such a date, we are carrying out this action because what you are doing is illegal. No qualms with that. But it is those poor people losing their merchandise. It is taking them by surprise. Why should a government that was voted for by those same poor people take an action that is averse, an action that is totally throwing them into abject poverty? What should have happened for this government is to be proactive rather than being reactive. They should have brought out incentives like we have been advising them. We have been saying ourselves, let this government bring in measures like giving soft loans to people with stands in markets. Once you have a stand in markets, you use that stand as collateral to go and get a loan from a bank or from a financial institution. People naturally will just move from the streets to go into the markets and access those loans. But the way they have done it is unacceptable, it's uncalled for. And though the action might be positive because we need a clean city, we need a clean environment, it is the method in which it has been done. It is crude. It is inhuman. It's uncalled for a government that professes to be people-driven government. It clearly shows they are anti-poor people. It clearly shows that their interest is only with those who are rich and deep pockets and not the ordinary Zambians.
But Harry, are you not playing politics and taking advantage of the situation?
There is nothing bold about the government that ambushes its people in the night. There is nothing bold about the government that avoids a conversation with its own citizens. It's all cowardice. And listen to me, and listen to me right. I leave playing mayor politics to lesser men. I am not for that. We are simply saying, why didn't you inform the people that on such and such a date, it should be your end day? You should stop trading on the streets and get your merchandise out. Why did you have to destroy the people's merchandise? Why? Because what is driving people is poverty on the streets. What is government doing to promote anti-poverty methodology? What is government doing in empowering poor people? They're doing nothing. And because they're doing nothing, they want to take stances that are going to make them be in favorable terms with their rich friends. That is not the government we want. We want a government that will hear both the rich and the poor.
Harry Kalabah is the leader of the opposition group called Citizens First. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the European Southern Observatory say they may have spotted two exoplanets sharing the same orbit around its star, located about 370 light-years away. There are many celestial objects, such as asteroids and moons, that share the same orbit in our solar system. Using the ELMA radio telescope array, the scientists noticed a patch of debris that might be following an exoplanet twice the size of Jupiter called PDS-70b. The astronomers say this debris cloud could either be material that will form a new planet or the remains of one that already formed. While theorized by scientists years ago, this discovery may provide the first piece of evidence that planets can share the same orbit. The astronomers will check in on these possible co-orbiting planets again in 2026. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Defending champions of the Le Mans du Ndigal Mountain Race in France, Patrick Kipengino and Joyce Njeru of Kenya braved an intensely competitive lineup to retain their crowns on Saturday. Despite the presence of formidable opponents, including first-timers and past winners, both races resulted in thrilling finishes, with Kipengino and Njeru securing victories. In the women's race, Joyce Njeru faced stiff competition from fellow Kenyan Filaris Kisang. The riveting race ended in Njeru winning in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 28 seconds, a slim 5 seconds lead over Kisang's 2 hours, 6 minutes, 33 seconds. In the men's race, Kipengino was up against his Kenyan compatriot and last year's runner-up, Philemon Kirago. Patrick Kipengino managed a consistent lead in the men's race, finishing first in 1 hour, 46 minutes, 44 seconds, with Philemon Kirago, also of Kenya, finishing in second place with a time of 1 hour, 48 minutes, 47 seconds, and Italy's Javier Chavira claiming the third spot in 1 hour, 51 minutes, 11 seconds. In basketball news, Mali bagged their 8th consecutive FIBA Under-16 Women's African Championship in Monastir, Tunisia on Sunday. Mali won the title after they defeated Egypt narrowly by 57 to 56 points. The two sides have now met in 6 finals since the championships was launched in 2009. In the men category, Guinea and Egypt are through to the final of the 2023 FIBA Under-16 African Championship. By reaching the final of the biennial African Championship, Guinea and Egypt also qualified for the 2024 FIBA Under-17 Basketball World Cup. Booking a place in the final was significantly historic for Guinea, as the West African nation will also, for the first time in the country's basketball history, be making it to the Under-17 Basketball World Cup. The 9th edition of the Francophone Games for French-speaking African countries is scheduled to take place from July the 28th to August the 6th. The Games is taking place in Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo, and brings together some 3,000 participants from over 30 French-speaking countries. The event was initially scheduled in 2021, 4 years after the latest edition in Côte d'Ivoire, but the COVID-19 pandemic changed plans. And now to water polo. The South African Women's Water Polo Team's challenge for a medal came to an end at the World Aquatics Championship in Fukuoka, Japan on Saturday. South Africa lost 21-6 to Canada in the playoffs. Canada will now face the Netherlands in the quarterfinals, while South Africa will drop into the playoffs bracket for a classification game where they will face France on Monday. And finally, Zambia's hope of a dream start to their maiden Women's World Cup campaign were shattered on Saturday after a 5-0 defeat by former champions Japan. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Good evening, Africa. Last week, President Cyril Ramaphosa told the South African public and the rest of the world that after close consultation within the BRIC members, a decision was taken to propose that President Putin of Russia participate by video link and not to be on site in Johannesburg. This decision, a wise one in the context of the dogged persistence of one party in South Africa, the Democratic Alliance, to go to court and obtain a judgment that the South African government is obligated to arrest Putin if he should arrive in South Africa. There are those who do not really agree in the context of their perception that failure to satisfactorily resolve the issue of Putin's arrest may well overshadow the importance of the BRIC summit in Johannesburg. So despite double standards, they are coerced in this consensus. One, Africans must also take note that the Democratic Alliance, which have turned out to be the strong support of the ICC, remains silent, deafening silence, when former Secretary of State of the United States Pompeo, the name of the ICC, along with the former chief prosecutor and its staff, when it was discovered they were planning to hold investigation about United States military behavior in Afghanistan, as well as that of its close allies Israel in the occupied territory. The U.S. Secretary made it clear that they would sanction the ICC if they dared to proceed with the investigation, and they would block the entry of any member of the ICC in the United States. The reason why one should accept the wise decision is because this in South Africa, Johannesburg, is a credit to the continent and to the government of South Africa. Here was a government that was the last to join the BRIC and now going to host what may turn out to be a significant advance of BRICS. The South African government announced also last week that 22 members states of the Global South have requested membership in BRICS, including such heavyweights as South Africa, UAE, Egypt, Argentina, and others. So history will record if they decide this type of expansion at this summit. There is also a misinformation about what BRICS is all about. BRICS was formed after decades of efforts by the Global South to reform the IMF and the World Bank. These institutions, very worthwhile, very effective, was established in 1944, a year before the end of the Second World War in 1945. That time, almost all the members of the Global South were mere colonies of the European powers. That is why they have called for the reforms of these two institutions, particularly the IMF, because of its importance in development. But until today, no meaningful reform has been undertaken, the IMF and the World Bank. And this was the motivation of the establishment. Some have asked, what has the BRICS done since its establishment? And those who follow these things closely, and not from time to time, could say, yes, BRICS had achieved a great deal. First, by remaining united, even though some have tried to peel off one member after another. Also, BRICS has established the new development bank, which is headquarters in Beijing and now led by Madame Cousset, a former president or Brazil. So Africans everywhere should pay special attention to the proceedings of this conference, summit conference in Johannesburg. They should not allow themselves to be distracted by those who have great questions about the BRICS or to be bamboozled by negative comments about BRICS by many others. I thank you.
That was one more point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
I go kill you with enjoyment, enjoyment, hey, enjoyment, 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 hey, I go kill you.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Take me back to Candyland, where all my worries must like my ways. Baby, you go love my craze. You must run my race. Oh, I'm the one for you, you, you. Man, play, I pick a bullet for you, you. Anything I do is for my baby, boo. Give for you.
Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the sun does not forget a village just because